Moses' voices.
Wow.
Yeah, Moses.
I just saw with Moses.
What do you mean it's wow?
And he'll say,
hey, that was a good impression right there.
The soul winner's like, the people are so
yeah.
Moses?
Well, Moses does that when
his
I'm preaching.
Laugh is loud.
When I'm if I mentioned something and he just like, I mentioned the Jews. He's like, I'm just like, man.
Sometimes it feels like that, though.
I was sharing from the pulpit that one time that like my mom was pinching my shoulder and he was just dying off of that.
I don't know, he laughed or coughed or something on the back of my head. Like, I felt his spit on the back of my head.
No.
I had to tell him afterwards, I'm like, bro, just take it easy. You spit on the back of my head, son.
So we took a week off of the podcast because the last week's wasn't uploaded. It's going to become a part of the archives, Lost Tapes.
So how does my wife watch this right now?
She doesn't. It's not live.
She has to be
here. It's not live.
Yeah. This is the way your wife watches it. She has to be here right now.
I thought podcasts were live. Aren't they?
No.
No.
They can be, but ours isn't. Because the thing is
we don't want to say stuff we need to edit out later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the thing. I have to do a lot of editing. Yeah, because sometimes these guys get a little out of hand.
I was wondering how the camera's always. How did he do that when they get the camera on everybody? I was not.
It's called man. If you're thinking that means a lot of people probably think that too.
Well, some people are like, "Hey, I missed the notification."
Oh yeah, yeah. They're like, "I missed the live stream. What happened?" I remember someone said that at first.
It's
I'm like,
so
"Live stream."
Well done the way you go to certain people and you know. So already editors.
From what I heard, from what I've learned, is film school is just a bust.
It is mostly.
It's better to just be self-taught.
But
and we have the resources now with the internet and YouTube to just learn on your own.
True, like I said, the kids are already knowing a lot of it, but it's a lot more detailed oriented. So you get something out of it. I got something out of it.
Yeah, I think the only thing that was good with film school is that when it comes to like lenses, for example. They knew how to actually do like measurements when it came to the actual lenses because you'd have to learn in film school how to pull focus. So like as you're walking, you have to like pull focus.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas now you have cameras that have automatic focus. So if you're walking, it tracks your face. So it just, you know, gets rid of a lot of that.
Yeah. They had that even when I went to film school. How long has it been now? 12 years ago.
So you went to film school?
Yeah, LA film school.
Oh, wow.
I have a degree in film.
Welcome to the Rod of Iron podcast, Fundamental Baptist, breaking down discussions, dogma, and daily events. I am your host, Pastor Bruce Mejia, First Works Baptist Church in Amani, California. I'm here joined by the fundamentalists. We have Marco Sanchez, Brother Hightop Mason, Paul Quesada right here in the corner, and we have a special guest with us this evening, Brother Will. What's your last name again? Laurie. Brother Will Laurie is a church member here at First Works Baptist Church. And actually, he's somewhat of a part-time missionary to the Philippines, right? You fly out there every couple of months,
yes.
Win a bunch of souls, and comes back, brings a good report. But he's a very interesting person that we want to interview. Actually, we're just talking right now that you went to film school.
Yes, LA Film School graduate.
LA Film School graduate.
Degree in many facets of filming, you know, directory.
Amen. So we might talk a little bit about that. Probably get a little bit into that, and then we'll get into the King James controversy of today and the nonsense that's going around, the false allegations, the stubbornness, and everything in between. And then we'll get into social media, right? I forgot what other subject we're going to talk about. I forgot.
And then idiots on social media.
Idiots on social. Well, that's kind of like involved in social media, period. So looking forward to a great podcast. Y'all ready?
Get on the topic of film school.
We did not.
Brother Will.
Brother Will. Did we?
Oh, no, we were talking about the podcast and the editing, and then he asked me if I went to film school.
I actually did my own.
I didn't do film school. You did a thesis film?
Yes, I did.
Speak into the mic, Brother Will.
I did my own thesis film.
If you don't speak into the mic,
when you say speak
you're going
to
hear
the
it
mic,
in the
I'm
comment
here.
Section. This. They're going to be like, the brother right there needs to get into the mic.
That's why that black guy don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
All right. It's always the blacks.
There's actually a black guy in the comment section who checks the people who don't speak into the mic. Is, yeah. They're like, the episode was good, but the brother with the van shirt needs to get into the mic. Come on, brother. He's like, it's the fourth episode, brother. Come on.
That's funny.
Haven't you watched this enough?
So how long ago were you in film school?
2008-09 graduated.
Did he just say 2008-09?
Yes.
Is that what you said?
8 and then 9.
Oh, 2008 and 9.
I graduated in 2010.
Okay.
And I did my own thesis film, as I said.
So what is that? What is that? What's a thesis film?
A thesis is when, you know, several people decide to do a film for their graduating thesis.
Mm-hmm.
And you either be part of someone's film to get credits, or you do your own. There was two other people that did the thesis film with me. They did a serious, like a melodrama, and one did a space movie, and mine was a comedy, of course.
You don't have the budget
and
for
no
a space
one will ever
movie.
See it.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
No one will ever see it.
Yeah, well, Will's from Philly.
Yes, I am from Philadelphia, born in Germany.
Oh, okay, yeah. Hold on a second. Will is a German. He's born in Germany.
Yeah, Frankfurt,
grew
Germany.
Up. Frankfurt, Germany.
Yes.
Frankfurt.
On the Frankfurter.
He was born in Germany. Yeah. He grew up in Philly, but he spent most of his life in Los Angeles.
That's right.
And you just keep going further west, too, because now you're in the Philippines.
Yes. And actually,
he's going to end up in Germany again.
Probably more in the Philippines if I had my way, because I'd love to be there and soul winning. And my wife lives there. Obviously, I want to be there.
Yeah,
my first initiative and impetus was to be there to go soul winning, bring my wife back. But once I did that, I get the bug. I have to be there now.
Curve the
because,
mic.
Curve it up.
It's so receptive. The gospel is like being, you know, they just drink it up and you never have a problem. And people say it's like the low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
It's like fruit you have to pick off the ground here. It's my fruit. But people are very receptive. Not the older generation so much. But the kids, very easy. They're, but you have 92% is Catholic, so you have that. So I have to emphasize the idolizing, the thou shalt have engraven images. They don't even know that. Mm. So when you bring it up, sometimes they're a little taken aback by it because they don't even know. So, but easily.
So you have this interesting method of capturing, because you sometimes preach to a group of children.
Yeah.
So how do you capture all their attention?
Very interesting that you say that, because that's what I like to do. Because so many kids, when you're giving it to, say, two kids or three, so many more kids are walking by and they'll come up and stand around it. You feel like you want to start all over because you want to get them too. So what I do is I'll start off by seeing, okay, there's two. I'll tell my wife, there's two coming there and there's two coming that angle. By the time those two get here, we'll get those two as well. So when I get about 2, 4, 5, you know, I've gone as high as 20 people or more with the kids. And, they, you know, it's hard to keep them involved and gross. So I've been in sales for years as a closer. So I get them involved by using techniques that I use in sales.
What's your YouTube channel called?
Say again?
Your YouTube channel.
It's called Pulling Them Out of the Fire.
Pulling Them Out of the Fire. So subscribe to the channel. He gives updates on that.
Yeah. I give updates when I go out there. Yeah.
When you go out there, you give some updates on how many souls you've won. You talk about some stories on there. It's good stuff.
Yeah. It's pretty good. And the kids are they enjoy it when I give them the gospel, because I'll remember their names. That's a technique that I use in sales. And they're surprised when I remember their name. And then I will go around. And then just when I think they're not paying attention, I say, and Jack. And okay, and the other kids will laugh because they think, okay, he remembered that guy. So, and what do you think you have to do? You know, I was like, to be saved or something to that matter. So I keep them engrossed because I have little jokes I say here and there that are like, you know, at the ready. So,
going back to our previous subject, I want to talk about that a little bit. Then we'll get into the Philippines.
Okay.
About film school.
Yeah.
So what made you get into film school?
I had
Just be honest.
I had
just
friends that are in the business.
Oh, okay, okay.
And Jews? I was involved.
You knew Jews.
It was. That's what I was going to say. That's what three ways you can get into the film business instantly.
I no longer likes you.
You're not going to have any problem getting to the
talent. I thought you were talent. German, bro.
There's that. Yeah, I'm a little German. Und das little bit German.
Guten Tag.
But there is.
Der Wiener Schnitzel.
What were we talking about? The concept of being...
No, why did you get into film school?
Well...
You had friends who were in the industry?
Well, being in the industry, uh-huh. you know people, and they say, hey, dude, you're pretty, charismatic. You have this talent. I mean, why aren't you doing... And I had different movie ideas. I had different... I had a series I was going to do, and a guy that was going to invest in me, he said, show me how serious you are.
So, you're trying to be a director or an actor?
I actually was going to do the acting. It was a comedy, a dramedy. It was a comedy drama.
Okay. Wait, so did you want to originally act or direct or both? Or what is it?
Not so much direct. Just to produce my own and act and sing in it because it was a musical concept.
Oh, you wanted to sing.
Mostly act.
So the truth finally comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's the mic that Michael Jackson.
I wrote a lot of the songs.
These are the mics that Michael Jackson used to use, right?
Yeah, I want that mic. I actually wrote something really well. I got registered with the Writers Guild, and the guy that was going to invest in me, like I said, he said, show me that you're serious. So I went to film school to learn the background. Because it was a series about a guy doing shows.
What did you learn in film school that you think it was beneficial?
Initially, that was not the concept. I don't care what I was going to learn. I was showing this guy I was serious.
Oh, okay.
But you did it
to kind of just because he wanted you to do it.
He was going to invest a substantial amount of money.
Because you're already saved.
Yeah, I was. But I was not. This is what happened. After I started school, I started getting a lot more devout in my Christian life that I didn't have before. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I wanted to find why my life is not going the direction I want to go. I'm always, God is not going to see me succeed in that business.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I was saying, and why? So the show I made had a moral concept.
Okay, so what you're saying is,
I thought it was a good show.
You were doing this in
this
career, but then you realize I can't continue in this because I'm a Christian.
The last straw was when a friend of mine, he had his own production, he still does, production company, and he says, well, we had a script, we're going to do the show, and we had a lot of different projects. And one of his projects, I had to read a script, and it was a lot of profanity. I said, I can't read that, dude. I can't say that. My mom's going to watch this, right?
Yeah.
Or I don't want this representation of me as a Christian. And he knew I was saved. He knew I was a Christian to the degree that he was starting to get annoyed by me saying these things. So finally he says, dude, you have to put that religion and Christian crap on the back burner and put your career in the front. I'm getting sick of you telling me about what you can't do as a Christian. And I'm like, whoa.
But you would have to stop it.
So my rationale at this point was like, this is leaning more towards being wrong than right.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? I think we should just squash this dude and just part as friends. And he said, oh, yeah, well, screw you.
Well, the reason I say this is because sometimes I know Christians who have tried to, get into that career, as far as, acting in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And either one of two things happen. They come to the conclusion that they shouldn't be doing it because they're Christians.
Because it's satanic.
It's satanic. Or two, just God doesn't allow them to succeed.
Yeah. I don't think he wanted me to. I thought, like I said, the show I had was had a moral drive to it. And I thought, God, I constantly say, this is a show that God wants
me to do. That's not going to get picked up, bro.
Hollywood
is wicked, man.
Yeah. How presumptuous was I to think this is what God wanted, right? It was nowhere near. And then there was a lot of things in the script that was like, wow, it was so not what God would want me to do. It wasn't a lot of profanity or anything like that in it. Some of the other projects we were going to work on did.
And well, it's kind of like Paul Weinberger when he was, he was kind of not working for Hollywood, but he was doing lighting and all that. And he decided to take his career or use what he knows into the direction of making biblical films and stuff like that.
The backdrop, I've learned, how to be you do editing, you learn directing, you learn all different aspects of it. You're a jack of all trades at that point. You don't have one thing until you find your niche, I suppose. So
So at this time, was it digital or were you guys like using film? What were you working
yeah,
with?
Yeah, digital.
Digital?
Yeah, absolutely. It was digital? Yeah, I'm not talking about the, you know, the 20s or the 30s.
Do you regret taking the class altogether?
No, I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And you know what else? It taught me that this is exactly, here's the reasons why I shouldn't be doing this. And as I seen more and more what I was learning, I'm like, you know, it was outside.
I don't want to be here.
I don't want to do this. And then, you know, I came to California for an entertainment career. Something in everything in entertainment. Music, acting.
You've been saved since you were
eight
years old.
My mom used to send us to different church, Christian camp every year, and that's how I got saved in the Christian camp. And, you know, when I heard Pastor Anderson, when I was searching for all my foibles in life and things I didn't achieve, I'm thinking, what's going wrong? Why can I never succeed in these things? When I would get almost there, something would happen.
Mm-hmm. But you are a very successful businessman, though.
I would say,
when it came to the Hollywood stuff, obviously that didn't pan out, which is good because that stuff is wicked.
Yeah.
But you are a successful businessman. Like
I've had several businesses through the years, and I've had a lawn and garden business, a steam cleaning, carpet cleaning business.
Man.
I've had a car service business. Well, you know, Lincoln Continentals.
Yeah.
With just the tent and wheels in the back, not like a limo service, but just car service.
Yeah.
But different things, and it's always, or I was partners with people that had business, so I would put money in with them, and they would run, and I'd be a silent partner, so to speak.
That's cool.
Businesses. Yeah.
Amen. Well, that's good stuff. Well, let me ask you a hardball question.
Uh-oh.
Something that I didn't tell you I was going to ask you prior to this,
shoot.
Right? So what's your take on the Black Lives Matter movement?
The blacks.
Because I'm asking because you're black.
I didn't think you were gonna bring that up.
Yeah.
Because you know what? That's highly controversial now. And like a guy just told me in my building, he said, "Will, you don't strike me as a black guy with your opinions on this stuff." I says, "Dude, I'm very black. It's just that it's a farce. It's a total political scam.
Yep.
And they bit hard into that apple. And it's phony. It's listen." I'm not a young guy. You probably know I'm 57. I'll be 58, and I'm a child of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
If you want to see racism in some aspects, we've seen it at those times, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that racist as they're saying it is now.
Yeah.
Then, it's just not.
Yeah.
And
so, what do you think? What do you think the agenda is behind it?
The agenda, as I said, is political to the degree that if you cause enough derision and division amongst your constituents, people, it's divide and conquer.
Yeah,
they can, and it's that right left paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the same. Like you said in the sermon, I thought that was so good. He says, "Look, you're either right wing or left wing. Hey, man, I'm neither
it's
one of
them.
I'm not
bird.
Even I'm a different bird altogether."
Yeah.
Okay, and that's where I am.
Yeah.
Right on the money. I love that. And I'm thinking, you know, how do I explain that to people when they're like, la, 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 la. I don't want to hear it. I don't bother anymore.
Yeah.
I don't bother. And don't get me started about the brothers say, yeah, man, I had a Hillary for prison shirt.
Hmm.
It looked like it was Hillary for president.
Yeah.
But it's a Hillary for prison. And he says, oh, man, good, man. You know, this is when Hillary's running in 2016. You, yeah, man, think Democratic. Yeah. Dude, take a closer look.
Read.
He said, oh, that's messed up. That's messed up, bro. I said, dude, do you realize that the Democrats started slavery?
Yeah.
Do you realize that
the
Democrats are the reason that you're having a problem? Let me say something. Obama's a president for 8 years, I told him. But take that out the equation. In the last 8 years, or at that time, it was the last 7 years, I said, have you done better as the world or the nation has done better for blacks? Or for anyone, how good has it become? Is it government become worse or become better? Worse, and that was under a black president. I said, so you're going to tell me that all of a sudden we're going to get a white woman in there, and you love her?
Hell.
Because what? Because the Clintons were even worse. Because they, I said, did you know Hillary Clinton said that we were animals, so to speak? She straight out said that we got to.
Well, her idol is what's her name?
Margaret.
Margaret Sanger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I said, dude, you don't know who you. Like Jesus said to the.
Yeah, and she, her agenda was to kill black people.
Yeah.
Through abortion. She's the one who introduced that.
Yes. And they don't realize that. Dude, you are not even thought of until election time comes along.
Ooh.
And I said, and do you know that for the last 40, 50 years, in the worst cities for blacks are all Democratic, always have been Democratic run. Mm. I said, no, I'm not Democratic. Oh, so you're Republican? Neither. Like I said, I wish I had that saying. You say that. I'm a different bird. I'm a Christian. That's what I mm-hmm. believe.
Amen.
And then when I got more of the Christian, I said, by the way, let me ask you this. Now, this is the, and I said, this is the most heaviest question of all. If you were to die today.
He's all, I'm a pterodactyl.
I'm a hawk. All right. Look, or eagle. I said, listen, let me ask you this. If you were to die today, do you know 100% sure we're going to go? He said, where did that come from?
I'm going to Hillary.
Because that's all I want to talk about.
He's like,
about.
I'm going to Hillary Clinton.
I'm going to Hillary. Yeah, man. He did, you know, he kind of wanted to go away then.
Yeah.
Hillary, isn't this a conspiracy that they were kidnapping children from Haiti?
It's not a conspiracy. It's just the truth.
I didn't say conspiracy theory. I said it's a conspiracy. Yeah,
right. It's in the emails.
It wasn't like a conspiracy. It was a conspiracy that she was a part of. And Hillary? The girl that worked for her kidnapped a whole bunch of them. They locked her up. But then they let her out. And now she's working for Child Protective Services here in the States.
And her lawyer was a convicted kind of.
They're all in the same boat. They're all crazy. It's like I couldn't believe that Trump won, first of all, because I just knew they were going to steal it either. That's why she never did any.
Well, we've been talking about in this podcast over the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. What's the purpose of Trump being in office and mm-hmm. the agenda behind that and nationalism, patriotism?
Right.
I preached on it in church. At the end of the day, it's again going back to that same phrase. It's the same bird. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's an agenda behind it. I'm thankful that, you know, because when it comes to race, you know, and racism, like in old IFB churches, there's a lot of racism in old IFB churches. I've seen a lot of it.
Arabs in it. Yeah, man.
But
old
IFB.
I never went to an old IFB.
You did go to old. You went to my old IFB church.
I take that back then. As I was growing up.
Ishmael.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Never was involved.
But it's super.
It's even deeper than like Ishmael subject. Like they don't even like. Believe in intermarrying, interracial marrying.
Not all of them, but but like some of them hold to that.
Mostly the South.
Like they don't believe in intermarrying and intermingling races and stuff like that. And it's funny because some of these pastors, like Phil Kidd, for example, who's a complete joke of a preacher. He's considered like a hard preacher back in my day. And he used to preach against, you know, intermarrying. But he's married to a Mexican.
the news media, talking heads, they're all pushing the same agenda. They're Democrats all the way. And there's certain black guys that are telling me, this is, like the guy said, Van Jones, I think his name, said, this is a white lash. What exactly does that word mean?
Van Jones. White lash?
That's eyelash? A Dutch lash.
It's like, instead of a backlash black. Or, I don't know, a whiplash. But he says a white lash when Trump won. And I'm thinking, what does that even mean? And the guy has a white wife. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how hypocritical can you be?
Was he blind?
I think he lost sight of that. But when when you get him off camera, somebody interviewed him off camera, he says, oh, this is all a farce. There's nothing there.
Well, I'm thankful that in our church, like, for example, we can care less about that stuff.
We have
races of all different types here at our church. We got black people. We got Hispanics. We have Asians, Armenians. What else do we got?
Did I say Armenians?
Russians.
We make fun of each other equally. It's not like we're
equal opportunity. Yeah.
Everyone gets it.
We're equal opportunity.
Everyone
bagger.
Gets that same dose.
And
I mean, look, I used to be, I was taught that basically like they would tell me, hey, you know, because I wanted to be a pastor when I first got saved and training and all that. And they would tell me, they would say, you know, hey, you're probably going to, you know, pastor a church with just only Hispanics, you know? And I was like, why? He goes, well, you know, white people are not going to really want to follow a Hispanic. That's just how it is. They're like, the only time a church can be filled with mixed group is when a white pastor is behind the pulpit, right? Yeah. He goes, but you probably just, they used to say this, you probably just pastor like the De La Hoyas. That's what they used to say.
De La Hoyas.
Yeah, De La Hoyas. That's what they used to say.
The boxer?
Yeah. Basically, because they would say, they would categorize them. They would say there's the Chavezes and then there's the De La Hoyas.
What does that mean? Difference?
The Chavezes are the ones who are just like really Hispanic. Like they speak nothing but Spanish. They don't speak English. And then you have the De La Hoyas, which are like Americanized. Well, they would consider me to be like a De La Hoya.
What a friend of mine told me, he was
a Chicano. Yeah.
His father was from Guadalajara.
Yeah. Oh, you said that pretty good.
But his mother's Kentuckian and his father's.
He's Armenian?
Yeah. And no, his father's Mexican.
Kentuckian?
He was blonde hair, blue eyes. I did not know he's Mexican. I used to work in sales with him. And he'd be on the phone speaking Spanish. I'm thinking, what is that language he's speaking? Because I could not picture him speaking Spanish. That kind of thing. I hate that concept to some degree because I heard T.D. Jake says on an interview, he says, well, how do you do so well with, you know, and with your business slash your ministry? He said, well, because Jesus is the product. I was so insulted. What? Are you selling Jesus?
Yeah. Buy the truth and sell it now.
And I thought, yeah, he's a product.
Oh,
and what an insult, right? So I think about that
prophet.
When I'm... I'm given
piece of trash,
the gospel.
Man.
I don't want to think that way, but I do use that kind of a technique, sales techniques to some degree, charismatic to keep people in. But it's
be
gift.
Wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove, man.
Yeah,
I think
okay. I'm not trying.
Are you talking about when you go soul winning?
Soul winning. When I go. Soul
winning.
Yeah,
I mean like when you go soul winning. But he's making it. He's literally saying Jesus is the product, and he's talking about in reference to making money.
Money.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And
I get this. People tell me this all the time. Oh, you're trying to get people to come to your church because you want their money? It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
I've never even asked for a dime.
Right?
Never.
I don't think you've even done a sermon yet on tithing.
I don't think so either.
No, you haven't.
I haven't, right?
I've watched every one of your sermons.
Know.
I've never.
Will's waiting for
I've mentioned it. I mentioned, but I've never preached a full length sermon
on
tithing.
Prior to this, well, just the guy that was telling you about that another subject we were talking about that was white. And he looked white, blonde hair, blue eyes. He told me that in where he goes to Guadalajara, it's the race thing going there, but the darker Mexicans against the lighter.
Oh, yeah.
The more Castilian.
Oh, yeah. There's racism even amongst Hispanics.
Yeah, right.
It's stupid.
It is.
Growing up, I used to hear about, like, Salvadorians hating Mexicans and Mexicans hating Guatemalans. And it's retarded.
Yeah. I'm an equal opportunity hater.
Now, I would say this is, like, in Long Beach. I remember growing up in Long Beach. There was always beef between black people and Hispanics.
Uh-huh.
Always. Right. But it was more like a gang rivalry, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You had the Crips who would always beef with the Longos.
Mm-hmm.
And it was I don't think it was over race, it was just over territory, but it would turn into like a racist type of a thing.
Well, there were certain areas when I lived in South Central during the riots, I was there, 120th and Budlong, and I would go down this certain alley.
The Rodney King riots you're referring to.
Yeah, the Rodney King riots. And there was a big soft loss. The gang was called the Soft Laws.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a Mexican gang. And I would go down this little alley and say, hey, this is my Soft Law alley. What are you doing? You're going down there? I always go down there. Because I'm not a gang affiliated. Mm-hmm. I'm from Philadelphia anyway.
Yeah.
And they would say, hey, I'm not going down there, dude. And I was wondering, oh, no wonder why those Mexicans would look at me all funny when I walked in. I say, hey, what's up? You know, hey. So they didn't bother me. But as soon as you're aware of the prejudice, I'll say, of that you shouldn't be in there, then you're sensitive to it. I wasn't. So it didn't bother me.
Well, no, you're right about that. Because even like when I was growing up in Long Beach, you had, there was like Crips that would like, they would sweat you if you're Hispanic.
Yeah.
I remember I almost got jumped by a group of insane Crips. We're on a bus one time.
Mm-hmm.
But OG Crip. From like, I don't know, I think it was like from early 20s or something. He backed me up.
I was going to say, it's the young ones. I had a young
one
when I
young
first
ones.
Got here. I had a bright red shirt on in a Crip neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And a youngster came up to me pumping gas. He says, where you going with the funny looking cuddles, cuz? I said, can you say that again?
he's like, I'm sorry, are we related?
I'm sorry, can you
repeat? Am I your cousin?
What did you say? He said, where you going with them funny looking cuddles, cuz? I says, seriously? I says, I don't know what you mean. I said, but I'm not from here. I just got here from Philadelphia. He said, well, you better ask somebody. And they all was like, oh. I'm like, I'll ask someone.
Well, look, I saw like racism to a certain extent, but it was honestly like I got along with a lot of black people. I got along with a lot of Crips.
Uh-huh.
And I knew some Crips that were just like, hey, if you know you ever run into any trouble, you can you know, talk to me and I'll help you out or whatever. You know, they're cool. But there are others, like, you don't want to get caught alone.
That's right.
Because they automatically think you're a part of, like, that Mexican gang.
Listen, I've seen so much violence before the riots. It wasn't a day, I'll say every 2 days, there were shootings.
Mm-hmm.
Kids would jump on the floor faster than me in the drive-bys. And they would say, Will, you better get down. And they look at them, like, the kids like this. Bah, bah, boom. Man, they were, they didn't know, they were like, the reflexes quick. I actually lived in a girl's house where she must have had enemies. I don't know. They raised my window.
Man.
I knew people. I said, where's John's dead. What?
Yeah.
Shot. Oh, this woman right outside my door.
Mm-hmm.
And some guy came and said, hey, man, can you use your phone? Patrice just would stab Sarah in the heart with a pencil. I'm like, yeah, right.
A pencil?
No, really. Stabbed her in the heart with a pencil.
I got stabbed with a pencil one time.
Oh, she died.
At school.
She died, too. So it was awesome.
Because I was clowning on a rapper. And this is like this guy's favorite rapper. And he literally took his pencil and he stabbed me. I was like, this dude just stabbed me for a rapper. People, there's some hotheads out there, man.
They're insane.
Yeah,
they're
insane. I mean,
the worst part about it, the most violence was between each other. Like a guy said, hey, man, you better put my beer down. Man, that's not your beer.
And she said,
he looks around.
If you have to ask,
if you don't put my beer down, I'm going to shoot you.
Oh, wait, it's me.
Who said that? Who said that? So, and he said, I'll shoot you. She said, well, you got to shoot me then. Pow, shot right through her hand through the cup.
Oh, man.
I'm like, these guys are treacherous. Another guy's walking down the street. Let me have two, man. What's his name shot me in my butt? Who? His cousin shot him in his butt.
Yeah.
Okay, then there's another guy who's going on a gang. They're going to a gang fight. They're all getting their guns ready. And he's driving. And he lurched and it shot him in the back. Now the guy's in a wheelchair because his buddy in the back seat shot him in the front.
Yeah, I remember.
And he's paralyzed.
I remember being in Long Beach. In Long Beach, you have like... You know, you have Samoans, you have black people, you have Hispanics, but you also have Cambodians.
Uh-huh.
And the Cambodian gangs are like, they're crazy, man.
Yeah.
They don't mess around.
Like Haiti.
But I remember when I was in high school, there's these, because everyone was kind of segregated a little bit.
Right.
But I remember, you know, we're lunchtime and there's these two Cambodian guys and they were friends. Like they grew up together. But one of them... Like this his friends click, like messing around, and the guy stomped him out. He stomped him out so bad that the guy like went to the hospital and the guy's like in prison for like attempted murder.
Mm-hmm. I've seen this.
Bleeding out of his ears.
I've seen this guy. He's
crazy violent.
And he's kicking his ass. I tried to stop him. I said, dude, he said, man, don't ever try to stop me again or I'll kill you.
Yeah, that's
I'm
a,
like, really?
That's some crazy people.
This is your friend, I'm thinking. He put the guy in the hospital. He's in a coma.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with this guy.
And I found out that this was the second time he put him in a coma.
Okay, after the first time, I was like, I don't want to be like, a friend anymore.
Yeah, but they're still
buddies. We're not friends.
You know, and it's funny because they're all selling drugs. And drug makes strange bedfellows.
The high school that I went to was called Woodrow Wilson High School. Uh-huh. And it wasn't as ghetto as Poly High, but it was pretty bad. Poly High is where Snoop Dogg went to. And Wilson High was a school that a teacher murdered a student. Stabbed her to death.
And you know her? You're at a bad school.
Stabbed her to death. Yeah.
What does she do?
Well, they were involved and stuff.
She didn't pass the
test. I remember one time there was a time when they jumped this guy, right? And it was during lunchtime, and it was like because they would let students go out of the property, like to the outskirts of where the school's at. They jumped this guy. This adult gets involved. He's trying to like save the kid. The group turns on him and starts jumping the adult. They jump the adult into the street. A car hits him. After the car hits him, they keep jumping him. I mean, like, crazy violence.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going to that school. I'm like almost being traumatized from all the violence that I would see. I'm like, this place is crazy.
And this you know is what? It was LA area.
And, yeah. And here's the thing is, like, it was filled with sodomites. That was another thing. Uh-huh. Like, the leaders of that school were sodomites. So I guess there you go.
The leaders, like the
what? Principal, the administrators.
Well, that's just like Hollywood.
Yeah.
Hollywood is run by, there's three different factions if you want to make it in Hollywood. I was going to say that.
Fags.
The faggots.
And the Jews.
And what was the third one?
And You know, it's been a long time. I used to say
the Jews. I think that's it. I think those are just
Jewish fags.
It's if you even know somebody that's Jewish, you know somebody. Oh, the drugs.
Oh, drugs. Jews.
Drews, drugs, and.
And fags.
And fags. You're not going to get these
people. All right, so let's switch some gears here. Let's talk about the King James controversy going on.
Oh, man.
We won't spend too much time on this because a lot has already been said. Many memes have been done. Very well put together. And
nobody ever said the King James Bible wasn't perfect.
In fact, all we have said is the King James Bible is perfect. Right? Many straw men have been set up to make it seem as though we're not King James only. Here's the thing is, you know, one thing you got to learn, and this is something that we have to learn, that we got to make sure that we apply to our lives as long as we're here, is we're going to be wrong sometimes, you know, and it's okay because we're fallible men, right? So when you're fallible, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to say things you're wrong. Or even, you know, maybe you might say something that's wrong and you didn't mean to say it. Or sometimes you just might have pride and you say something wrong because you just don't want to show that you're wrong. So you just lie. But either way, you know, humility is very important. You know what I mean? To be able to admit and say, you know what? That was so stupid.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was wrong. Can we just make this right? You know, and here's the thing is like people, you actually gain more respect when you do that.
That's right.
So when you are willing to admit that you're wrong and say, yeah, I was wrong about that. You know, I apologize. You actually get more people to admire you and respect you because they say, okay, this person's a mature person. But when you just keep driving in and just digging yourself deeper, people actually begin to despise you.
And they can't possibly respect him.
No.
You lose a lot of respect.
You lose a lot of respect, especially when there's an insurmountable amount of evidence to prove that you're wrong. You know, it's just like, hey, it's right here. Here are the facts. How do you trust someone like that?
Right.
How do you trust someone that when you present them the facts, you say, well, look at the sky. It's blue. And they said, no, it's purple.
Right.
It's like, what? It's like, what's wrong with you? You know? It's hard to respect someone like that. It's hard to follow someone like that.
Especially when we're all brethren, we're all saved, and we're on the same page, and just keep on the same page.
Yeah.
You would think, like I said, when I watch this, I'm thinking, what is this conference all about again? What's the purpose? What purpose is it serving?
I just never would have thought that like someone in the new IFB, and they might not even claim new IFB anymore, which that would be good if they don't.
That'd be fine with me.
You know? But I'm just shocked that someone would even like adhere to Ruckmanism. Okay, like, well, we're not Ruckmanites. If you have to make that statement, though, after you said a Ruckmanite statement, then what you're basic out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh.
Right.
You're basically saying this is what Ruckman believes.
It's funny because like some people don't even know what Ruckman believes. All they know him for is because of his dispensational stand.
Yeah,
but it's like. He also took a weird stand on the King James Bible as well, on the Word of God.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, for you to make that claim, it's like, oh, we're not Ruckmanites. It's like, okay, why did you have to say that? Yeah, you're right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. What's unfortunate is, like, Ruckmanism and dispensationalism has really been dying. But now it's made a resurgence.
It's revived.
Ruckmanism has made a resurgence because of Patrick Boyle. You know what I mean? And you know what? They're giving ammo to the enemy.
Right.
To say, well, they believe like we believe, you know? Yeah. And I'm not going to belabor the point because, you know, obviously there's a lot of videos out there that Pastor Anderson has put out and, you know, proving that the King James Bible is not translated word for word. That's like, that's just common sense.
It is.
And what's unfortunate is that he speaks another language,
words.
Romanian. So he should know you cannot translate things word for word. And look, I don't care what anybody says. You cannot translate idioms into another language. I'm talking about word for word.
Yeah, they would not make any sense.
No. I'll give you an example of this. So back in the day when I was little, of course, I grew up in a Spanish-speaking home. My mom spoke Spanish. I speak Spanish fluently. I can read it. I can speak it. I can even preach in Spanish. And I can write it. And we grew up in a Spanish-speaking home. My brother spoke Spanish. My sister spoke Spanish. But I remember my brother... He used to basically try to translate English idioms into Spanish in conversation. So, for example, you have the idiom don't jump the gun. He jumped the gun. Well, he would always say, no brinca la pistola. And my mom would just laugh. She's like, what are you saying? He goes, no brinca la pistola.
Now, you know, he's
like,
Spanish.
Though. Yeah, but yeah, he said it in Spanish. And she's like, what do you mean? What does that mean?
Where's jumping the gun? You have a gun?
Like, and he's like, well, that your mom, that means, you know, this. He's like, well, not in Spanish. You can't translate that into Spanish. And any of them into Spanish, you sound stupid.
Which goes back to what made these guys all of a sudden experts in the translations. Why all of a sudden are they supposed to be someone that we should look up to and says, what you're saying is crucial or important? What are you trying to achieve, number one, by making all these efforts to have this conference? And what made you all of a sudden a translation expert?
Well, they're not translation experts.
I watched some of it. They've proven it
yeah. over and over again. Like, for example, the whole God forbid, mi genito, right? In Greek, okay? Which... You don't even have to have an elementary understanding of Greek to know that God in Greek is Theos.
Yeah. And it's not found in that.
It's mi genito. Yeah. And, you know, obviously the enemies of the King James Bible would say, well, that's not a proper translation, because if it's, you know, let it not be, and the King James says, you know, says God forbid, that's not word for word. But hold on a second. Dynamic equivalence was used there, and it sounds great. Mm-hmm. And it gets the point across, right? But then people go to the extreme and they'll say, well, no, because it says God forbid in the King James, it has to say God forbid in Greek, okay? This is what they're saying. Now, this is the question that I have for them, okay? What Spanish Bible are you using in your church? Because obviously, you know, they're in Florida. There's a lot of Hispanics in Florida. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a lot of people who go soul winning there. And they're using... one of three versions of the Bible in Spanish. Okay, I know we only got one Spanish speaker here, but you guys just ride along for the conversation for now. Okay, you have the 1909, which is a popular version to use, the Antigua. You have the 1602 Purificada. Or actually, say four versions. 1602 Purificada, 1602, and then you have the Reina Valera Gomez. Right? All of these, except for the Purificada, they all say, let it not be. Every single time that God forbid is being used. So here's a question that I have for them. So which version are you using to win people to Christ? Because another argument that they bring up is this, is like, well, you can't interchange. You can't use eternal and everlasting interchangeably. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the problem with that. In Spanish, you only have one word for eternal or everlasting, and that's eterna. So in John 15 and John 16, John 3, 15 and 16, you have eterna for both verses.
Both times, yeah.
So how do you go soul winning then? Because the all of them, whether it's the Purificada, the 1602, the Gomez, the 1909, they all say eternal.
So that's as if to say, if you're going to debunk the, and that's what I'm thinking, why are they trying to debunk the King James Bible?
Was your question answered, by the way?
My question was not answered.
Okay, well,
because who there is no answer. The answer is this, exactly. Is that both of them are fine. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, even like you can even use that for like Romans 4:5, because even in Romans 4:5 in Spanish, there is no word for righteousness.
It says justo.
Justo, justificado.
Just.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So what are you going to say there? Cuz you know you have righteous and then you have justice, right? Being just or being righteous in Spanish is just just.
But what like I said, I don't ultimately understand.
I don't think it has anything to do with their position that they just, they're King James onlyist. Here's what I believe it is. It's called envy.
But my point is this.
It's envy.
We had these.
They're envious of Pastor Anderson.
Okay. They're having a King James Bible conference for envy?
Yes. You'd be surprised what people stand before envy, the Bible says.
Because I'm watching thinking, I know I liked all the conferences we had, all the ones I've watched, the Red Hot preaching, everyone had purpose behind them. What is the purpose for this? Is this people to Christ?
It's causing division. I just give everything the benefit of the doubt. So when I heard it, I was like, okay, cool. They're going to have a King James conference, you know?
Right.
Looking forward to it, you know? But then when I started hearing... Ruckmanism, and I heard, because I was listening to it, not thinking that anything crazy was going to be said there, But then I literally hear him say that you can use the King James to correct the Greek, and I'm like, I'm gonna play a 10 second playback. I was like, did he just say what I think he said?
The only thing it sounded like to me was being critical of the King James Bible. That's all I've heard. Once I've listened, I heard enough. I didn't listen to much. But all I hear is that they're being critical of it and how they're debunking it. The purpose to me is to cause division, and it worked.
Well, I think what it is, again, what I was saying is that I think it just has to do with envy.
I get that.
And I think sometimes people, they compete with Pastor Anderson. You know, I've always learned that if someone is doing something better than you, okay?
Amen.
If someone is doing something better than you, you don't compete with them.
You learn from them.
You learn from them.
Right.
Because that means they're obviously doing something right. So why would you want to compete with, why would you want to push them down to elevate yourself? Why not just emulate what they're doing and learn from them and then customize it to your church?
Exactly.
You know, and this is what I've seen, and it's ridiculous because I grew up in a culture of loyalty.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. And being, you know, appreciative. It's a bad move when people get help from Pastor Anderson and they just turn on him. You know what I mean? That's wicked.
It is.
Because it's just like, man, how are you? So you just fill up your church with people who have been reached by Pastor Anderson, and all of a sudden you just start attacking him. You know? And
I wonder what the people in church that respect and admire Pastor Anderson, how they feel about their pastor now, because you're putting him down.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to speak for the church members because I don't know how they feel. Maybe there's some. I know there's some that agree with Pastor Boyle, and I'm sure there's some that don't agree with him, you know. But here's the thing, folks, is we need to love the truth, and we can't ignore facts. So many facts have been given. So many things have been debunked, and it's just like people just make their – they're just stubborn. They make their faces as an adamant stone, but not because they're determined, but they're just because they're stubborn.
Right.
You know, if you're wrong, you're wrong.
And then lo and behold, when they see their opinion is not gaining traction, they just turn around and call the new IFB a cult.
Yeah, that's their wild card. Yeah. It's like, well, it's just that's a cult.
Yeah.
And it's look, like, no, I made a video this week about Pastor Anderson's leadership.
Right.
And people try to, like, you know, say, oh, he's just trying to control all these churches. And, you know, he's just trying to control the people and the preaching. Dude, he didn't even do that to me when I worked for him.
I didn't see that.
Right. I
we were here from the beginning.
But here's the thing. I worked for him.
I believe.
I worked close to him. He never did that with us. He never did that with me. And when he had the right to. So when he had the right to call me and say, hey, you can't preach that. I don't want you to take that sermon down or whatever. I don't agree with that specific interpretation. He never did that. I literally remember having conversations with him and saying, hey, I don't agree with you on this passage of this scripture and it's your interpretation. Here's my interpretation. What do you think about that? He would say, well, I don't agree with it, but preach it.
Right.
Go for it. I don't care. He's like, because we agree on 99% of doctrines, it's okay to have a difference of opinion. And look, there was times when issues would come up here when it was Faithful Word, and I'd bring it to him and say, hey, you know, this is what I think we should do, but you're the pastor. What do you want to do? And he would say, I trust your judgment. You do it. I threw people out of our church sometimes without asking him because he trusted me. He's not a micromanager. And I'm not saying micromanaging is a bad thing. I'm just saying that's not what he did. Mm-hmm. So if he's not willing to do that with the church that belonged to him, how much less for churches that are out there?
Right.
You know, what it is insecure leadership is what it is, folks. Mm-hmm. Pastors who are just insecure, they hear about their congregation talking about Pastor Anderson in this sermon and that sermon, and they want to be the Pastor Anderson of that church.
Isn't there enough strife against Pastor Anderson to have the people that supposed to be your brethren within the IFB or new IFB to start this kind of animus towards each other?
I mean, well, look,
towards
him. This is what I've learned from him, and this is what I've always thought. Because, you know, any pastor wants to grow their church. Any pastor wants to do great exploits and preach great sermons and do their own thing, and that's okay because we're independent.
Right.
But you don't do it by tearing someone else down. A friend of yours especially. And I remember the conversation that I had with Pastor Anderson last Red Hot Preaching Conference. he came up to me and he said, Brother Mejia, he says, you got to start your own movement. Reach your own people. He's like, don't forsake me. I'm still your friend. You know, we need to be friends, but you need to do your own thing.
Right.
Start your own movement. Do your own movies. Do your own thing. But don't do it at the expense of tearing me down.
You would think that would be obvious.
Of course.
I saw
Pastor Bull's video where he started off saying, oh, welcome to First, I'm sorry.
He's Faithful all, Word welcome Baptist. To Faithful Word Baptist. Oh, wait, it's Revival Baptist Church.
But here's the thing. No, Pastor Anderson, I don't think Pastor Anderson even expressed his opinion on the matter until, you know, first it came out that, you know, they were text messaging and mentioning Pastor Anderson kind of behind
his back. It's probably because
But apart from that, if you're going to do a whole conference and you're making it public, you have a public ministry, don't blame a pastor who knows more on the subject who's going to come in and say, no, actually, that's incorrect. This is correct.
Yep.
Learn from that.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, he was already corrected prior to that. Pastor Anderson had already
He corrected Pastor Major. And
That's what I'm saying. So they're being stubborn.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So this is these issues that we're hearing about, they were already addressed prior to this conference. In fact, they were addressed during the missions conference.
They were addressed at Chan Pan Thai restaurant, the best stinking restaurant in Phoenix area.
So it kind of just goes to show that there was...
I don't agree with the that agenda statement. Was, that's
made by Marco Sanchez. That's what Pastor Anderson said.
I don't agree with Pastor Anderson on that. I don't believe that. Though he has a lot of credibility when it comes to restaurants... He hasn't steered me wrong. I just have a hard time believing that. What were you saying, Hike?
No, I'm with that. In,
he's
in
upset. Light.
No, I'm done.
No, I'm just saying there was
no. Go ahead, talk.
There was an accord. There was like another agenda. So it really wasn't about the King James Bible at all.
No,
because nobody ever said the King James Bible is not the.
I like what Pastor Jimenez said. You and your 900 subscribers.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. On the way here, I was listening to that. I'm like, wow, okay. Is it really just about notoriety?
It's about notoriety.
Is that it?
900.
Because that's why Major did it.
That's why they get upset. Let me say this, all right? People have an expectation when they become Pastor Anderson's friends. Okay? This happens. Where they become his friend, then they expect their churches to just burst out the seams. They expect to just have this notoriety. And sometimes it doesn't happen.
Well, when this church was started.
Pastor Anderson.
And then they blame Pastor Anderson.
When this church was started, I was going to Pacific Baptist.
Look, folks, let me say this.
I didn't know about it.
It's not Pastor Anderson's fault if no one listens to my sermons.
Uh-huh.
If my sermons never hit 1,000 views per sermon, that's not his fault. That means my preaching sucks. Mm-hmm. Okay, and maybe no one wants to listen to me.
Well,
you know, so if it's like if people don't listen to your preaching or they don't tune in, well, I mean, then get better.
And it doesn't even necessarily mean it sucks. It's just it sucks. Okay. Maybe try harder. Maybe hey, Pastor Anderson. No, wait a second.
Why are you defending them?
Pastor Anderson put a lot of time into his ministry.
Yeah. And not dude, just his. He's been at it for how many years? Ministry.
It definitely wasn't ready made.
He's been at it for how many years?
They kind of want like instant results.
Nobody gave him 100,000 subscribers to begin with.
Exactly. Exactly.
The purpose is to reach people and save them, right?
Right.
You would think that's the ultimate goal.
Okay, let's say, for example, like you said, it's about reaching people, seeing people saved. Let's say I just had no subscribers on my channel, okay? Or let's say I had 900 subscribers since we started. And no one views my videos
Pastor
or whatever.
Anderson must be doing something wrong then.
Yeah. At least I got a church. Amen. The most important people are the people in my church. The YouTube is like a secondary thing that I do. Mm-hmm. If you don't get notoriety out there, it's okay. People are listening to you here. They're attending your church. You have people who listen to you 3 hours a week here. Yeah. You should be content with that.
Well, it's a good thing that people like your preaching because when I'm in the Philippines, the church that I go to there, they love.
Praise the Lord.
They ask me when I tell them about it, especially when we did that little video, something about to happen.
Bro, I have one subscriber and it's my wife and I'm ecstatic about that.
He goes and even she unsubscribes every once in a while.
No, she hit that bell icon. She hears me.
You have a YouTube channel?
No.
Oh,
Just my own voice in my own home.
I'm here to talk about Armenian.
Armenianism.
Armenianism.
versus Calvinism. That's not the Armenian, by the way, that I am. I'm not.
Not to be mistaken with Armenianism.
Anyways, what I'm saying is this, is that, you know, utilize a man like Pastor Anderson. I don't mean use him as in like use him to start. I'm talking about utilize his knowledge. Dude, okay, if you're doing a King James conference, you want to get someone like Pastor Anderson on there because he has a very thorough understanding, not just of the King James Bible, but he has a plenary understanding of the Greek.
Yeah. Right?
So isn't that someone you would want to like reference?
If they did reference him, it was in the negative, wasn't it?
Exactly. I would have been like, hey, come and teach this or whatever, you know. So don't compete with the man. You see what I'm saying?
I was annoyed by that.
I've never had the mentality, I got to compete with Pastor Anderson. My take was always been, he is so much far ahead than I am. So therefore, you know, he can teach me a lot.
Yeah.
I call him all the time, ask him for counsel, wisdom, because he's succeeded
right
at what I'm doing. You know? But the old adage still remains true. Hate is going to hate.
You're going to hate. And the ultimate goal is not to build your YouTube
persona. It's to see people saved.
It's to, and not even to build your church up necessarily, mm-hmm. to fill it up.
Just serve
people.
God, man.
It's to come serve on. God, save the lost.
Yep.
I see this, what I can say, when this church first started, I was wondering, why didn't Pastor Anderson mention that in the sermons? I watch his sermons every week.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he mentioned it in his the service, and you don't do the
the announcements,
the sermon. So I guess that's why I missed it until I went and someone was trashing Pastor Anderson.
That's how you found out about
it. And that's how I found out about this church. That's he said, "Yeah, Pastor Anderson. Why brings you to our church? Oh, Pastor Anderson referred this church to me.
Yeah,
and here this church is trashing him, and not the church is up with this guy. Yeah. He says, "Oh, he's so cantankerous." I said, "Oh, that's a good $50 word, cantankerous, huh?" So he's a bad guy. So you don't like him? He said, "Oh, he's just, you know." But he started some church in El Monte. I was okay.
Thanks. I guess that's good where I'm know. Going.
And that's where I went. I was the last day I've been there. I was there.
I was like, you know what? And our church has grown a lot.
Yeah, El Monte, you say?
It's exceeded my expectations.
And that was
I thought, because we started with like 30 people, 25, 30 people.
And that's a good start, though.
That is a good start.
That's a real. That's like Pastor Anderson had, you know, 10 people. It was his family.
Right.
But even then, like, we have some people here that don't even know who Pastor Anderson is.
Right.
We have some people that are barely going to listen to him preach tomorrow evening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have people who never heard his sermons before. They don't even know what's going on. Sometimes they don't even know what's going on with the controversies. All right. So, it's a stupid situation. And honestly, the best thing that's come out of this whole thing are the memes.
Yeah.
The memestry has been on point on Facebook. I've enjoyed it thoroughly. I when things like this happen, like, I'm more on Facebook just because I'm uploading like a lot of memes. Uh-huh. You get a lot of ideas, you know.
Yeah.
But it is what it is, you know. We still move on, and our movement, quote unquote, does get stronger. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's going around the world, man. Like I said, in the Philippines, somebody told me, he said, "Are you in the same area as where Pastor?"
Yeah.
He is. I said, "Yeah, that's my pastor." He says, "Oh, I love him.
It's cool."
And I thought that was great. The church there. I don't want to veil off the subject again too much, but I love that church, Pastor Robertson.
Yeah, Pastor Robertson.
He used to be in, he's from New Zealand. He went to Australia, and they kicked him out because he was preaching against the Muslims. And, you know.
He's great. He's a great preacher. I like him a lot. And he's doing great work.
I mean,
he's a perfect example of someone who's just like, he just keeps serving the Lord no matter what capacity.
And if he makes reference to Pastor Anderson, and he does sometimes, it's always respectful.
Yeah. Well, and you should respect your fellow.
And it's not just respect, it's because he's.
You should respect your fellow pastors, no matter who they are.
That's right.
You know, like, I love all my friends in the new IFB, the pastors. You know, Pastor Aaron Thompson is a good friend of mine. I talk to him regularly. Pastor Jason Robinson.
You're fighting for the same awesome team, pastor. I mean, come on, man.
You know, Pastor Fritz. These are great guys. These are, look, folks. We don't have that many friends to begin with. It's like, that's not the time to turn on your friends. It's like,
cringe.
It is cringe.
And I love these guys. I love these pastors.
Look, it says a lot.
It
says a lot when someone wants to be our friend because, you know, it comes with a certain territory.
Yeah.
So I appreciate when a pastor is not ashamed to be my friend. You know what I mean? And I'm talking about openly. Because I have people who are friends with me, but they're like Nicodemus.
Undercover, you know what I mean? Yeah.
But there's people who are open with being my friends, and I appreciate that. You know, I don't want to lose that. Yeah. So you shouldn't attack other pastors and try to bring people down to try to elevate yourself up. And, you know, it just looks shady that after you've been established and everything, you start doing stuff like that. It just looks wrong.
It is shady.
Yeah, it is shady.
Call a spade a spade.
Especially
after he, like, defended you to, like, what was it, McCraney and Tomlinson?
It's funny. Tomlinson? It's on the comment section. Tomlinson actually commented on one of the videos.
I saw that.
And he was like, I told you he was a snake from the beginning.
Pastor Anderson
said, well, it takes one to know one.
and then like he comes out, he's like, that's somebody else. I'm like,
Wait. Tomlinson came out of hiding or something? Like,
yeah, to comment on the whole Boyle thing. Because he was getting on Boyle a while back. You know? Takes one to know one, you know? Like,
Tomlinson.
I just know that Pastor Anderson's never talked about anyone in that type of way where he's picked someone out particular, saying I didn't like the way they said this or preached that, or you know, the only time he does speak about them is when they're attacking him.
Look, when he would come preach here, obviously he was the pastor here, but he would almost treat it almost as if we're like an independent church.
I got that feel,
you know, and he would show me respect when I was here. He wouldn't like, you know, devalue me as the leader here. He would always cast vision that we were going to go independent. You know, he was very secure in his leadership.
Because he understands the purpose.
He wasn't like, this is Faithful Word Baptist Church.
Exactly.
He understands the purpose, the end goal. The end game here is to save people.
Exactly.
And when I was looking for a good church before I went to Pacific Baptist, mediocre churches, that's, to say that they were the worst, some of these churches. I'm not talking about Pacific
Baptist. He wasn't talking about that, yeah.
I'm not talking about Pacific Baptist. I talked to certain churches where the pastor was like, hello, can I hear this pastor? Can you speak up? I can't hear you. Then I realized he's reading from a Bible. I can't even understand. And it was in NIV. I said, well, Pastor Anderson did a sermon on that's like a deal breaker. If someone's reading from NIV, ESV, and you don't want to go to a church like that.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah, it's unfortunate, but hey, Pastor Anderson's coming tomorrow. Actually, when people watch this, it's going to be tonight. So make sure you tune in tonight to the live stream. Pastor Anderson's going to be preaching, and hopefully we'll get a packed house here. It's going to be great. It's always awesome to have him come, you know, because ultimately, yeah, he lives in Arizona, but, you know, he's a California boy. So, you know, I think that's one of the reasons we get along so well here with Pastor Anderson, because you know, he just has that California flavor, you know what I mean? So he's a funny guy, great preacher, awesome fellowship. It's going to be great. We're looking forward to having him. And he's always welcome at First Works Baptist Church.
Amen.
You know, he's always been a good friend, and he was there for us during a difficult time, you know. So, you know,
I couldn't wait for him to start a church here when I first listened to him years ago.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be even in this position that I'm in, with to travel to go to Philippines to do what I'm doing, if it wasn't for Pastor Anderson,
we owe him a lot
of things came together.
We owe him a lot.
Yeah,
you know, it's just.
I mean, you know, I would never fathom that I would save hundreds of people in the Philippines, and my wife.
Well, let me say this.
She's saving people.
Let me say this. Let's say.
Gracious.
Let's say Pastor Anderson and I had some crazy disagreement about something, right? Uh-huh. Let's say, God forbid, okay, pun intended. Whoa. Let's say, God forbid, that like I had Ruckmanite views, okay, which no, I don't. Never will. But let's say, theoretically, let's say I had like a Ruckmanite view. I would kind of just keep it to myself. Or even if I were to teach it, I wouldn't attack him.
Or slander him.
Slander him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's obviously never going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, theoretically speaking, if I disagreed with him on something that I knew he disagreed with, I would never teach it and slam him at
publicly,
the same time. Publicly,
especially not publicly.
You know, because, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, obviously, especially if you're in an independent church. Yeah. You know, this is my church. That's my pulpit. Mm-hmm. I can teach whatever I want, what I believe, how I'm interpreting the scriptures. But you should never do it and attack someone who's your friend.
Yeah.
I'll attack a false prophet. Obviously.
I was going to say, what if they're not necessarily a false prophet? If they were preaching something that was against the once saved, being saved doctrine.
Oh, instance, yeah. Then that's
then you have to,
no
you
whole
have
bar.
To, you have to tell them.
Yeah.
You have
of
to put them on front street, right?
Yeah.
On,
call
on
them
the
out.
Public, right.
But this is different.
It's different, right.
It's different. So, but no, I'm not a Ruckmanite. I have all my brain cells. You know, it's a stupid doctrine.
Something in the air in Florida.
You had to say it. This guy had to say it.
It's the East Coast, man.
You know what was like when we went to San Francisco for the San Francisco Sony Marathon over there? Pastor Anderson, I remember when we were driving up in the car, we were talking about how Patrick Boyle was going to be taking over Steadfast. And Pastor Anderson was like, man, he was like excited about that. I don't know if you remember.
Me too.
He was like, I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be great. He's closer to Jacksonville right there. He can, you know, manage it better and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, he was excited for Patrick Boyle to take over that church.
I was too. You know, it sucks, but whatever. You know, it is what it is. We don't live in a perfect world. And this stuff is going to happen. Apparently, it's got to happen, like, on a yearly basis because it's happening, like, right? Every single year, you know? So
I guess that's what June had for us in 2020.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, looking forward to service tonight. For us, it's tomorrow. But for anyone listening and watching the podcast, it's tonight. It's going to be great. Make sure you tune in at 7 o'clock for the live stream at First Works Baptist Church. Pastor Stephen L. Anderson will be preaching. So we're excited about that. Brother Will, Lori, thank you for joining us on the podcast. It was great talking to you.
Great.
Awesome church member, does a lot of soul winning. Make sure you subscribe to his channel, Pulling Them Out of the Fire on YouTube. He gives updates there. And so
I'll be going back out there again in August.
In August. So be in prayer over him. If you want to support him, you can get in contact with him. I'm sure he has his links in his description on his channel. Yes. And if he doesn't, he will now. So make sure you tune in next week for episode number 7. I think this is episode 5. Yeah, this is episode 5. So
it'll be 6.
6, sorry. Episode number 6 next week. I don't know what episode this is. I'll cut this out. Tune in next week for the next episode. Looking forward to it. God bless you all. Have a good one.